Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
Wait a minute. My chair's not moving. You know, I try to be so organized, and all of a sudden, I can't move it to my microphone. I'm sorry. No one to believe the crazy things that go on here. Try doing a radio show. You think you're all organized, and all of a sudden, wait a minute. The mic's there, and I'm back here. We had a fabulous time at the rally last Saturday, so I want to thank everybody that came out, and it was a pleasure to meet you all. And we have a bunch of new listeners. We have, I think, some new advocates. We have new people interested in what's going on. And it was absolutely fascinating. And we should have Shannon Rice joining us in a second here. So I don't want to reveal too much about what happened at the rally, because she was there at the table right beside me. So we had a great time talking. So hopefully as soon as Shannon gets a chance to hop on board, we'll be all set. I got more messages. I got people coming on. Well, let me just tell a couple of things. There were some just incredible people there. And it was really nice to see everybody come out and be advocates. And what's happening is, I'll talk about this again when Shannon gets on. What's happening is that the conservative leadership are sort of in the dark ages. They're still talking about, they're still making speeches, they're still kind of, you know, rambling on about stuff. And I think that they're almost like Democrat leaders in a way. In other words, they think they can, you know, take care of us, that if we just sort of shut up and let them manage things, everything's going to be great. Now, that's the deep state. That's certainly the Republican establishment. Even the conservative advocates are still, you know, let us do it kind of thing. And I think what's happening, and this is why I think it's such a great time for Action Radio, is that we the people are suddenly saying this country is going to be run by we the people. Okay, so move over. You know, what is it? Lead. What is it? One of the Watergate villains used to have a saying on his. I think it was John Mitchell, the Attorney General. This is back in the Nixon era. He said, "Lead, follow, or get out of the way." And so I think we're kind of at that point now. But the thing is, the people are leading. And the elected folks that think they're in charge better start following, or we're certainly going to push them out of the way. So a lot of interesting things. So let me cover some other news until Shannon gets here. And again, you know, people get held up, stuff happens, you know, who knows, maybe there's always last minute things, but that's okay. Like I say, I always have enough stuff to, let's see what we got here. Okay. Well, I guess it's all right. I just got a note from Shannon. She's not going to be able to make it. So, you know, stuff came up. So it's just you and me for this half hour. So if anybody wants to call in, 215-383-3832. So let me go talk about all the things I, you know, sort of waiting to talk about. Well, let's get into the rally. So it was the Arise USA rally, and it was also the Faith, Family, and Freedom rally. And it's kind of complicated how it happened. As I understand it, there was supposed to be the rally in Pensacola, and I think there was some kind of a permit issue or something happened, and it got moved over to Milton. You know, like I said, I'm not sure all the particulars, but we ended up with this rally. And I didn't stay for all of it because I got bored. And I think I got bored because it was speeches. And I think I'm bored with speeches. You know, I really am. It's kind of weird. But again, this goes along with this whole idea of I don't want to be lectured to or talked to, or, you know, when the speakers got up, And they talked about stuff we've all heard before, we have to get together and we have to move ahead, and you know, we're all Americans and we're all in this together. And of course, the black guy talked about being black, and the woman talked about being a woman. You know, it's like, wait a minute, what is this identity group politics here? I could hear this from the Democrats. I don't need to hear it, you know, from a bunch of conservatives. And so it was just interesting the way this went about, and it's almost anticlimactic. By the time the speech came about, the rest of us, we'd already done our activism. We'd already connected with each other. We'd already talked. We'd visited each other's tables. You know, I have a guest book signed. I've got two pages of new contacts of people to talk to about Action Radio. And I think what was fascinating was the reaction to Action Radio by new people. And, I don't always see it because I'll talk to people and then they'll listen to it. And I'm not right there when they listen to it. But in the case of this table, I was right there and I was able to talk to people right there in front of me. And so what was fascinating about that was, you know, their eyes get bright and they go, wow, we can do something. And I think that's the, I was almost going to title the show, you know, wake up and do something, because that's what's happening. People are already awake and they want to do something. So I've titled the show today, The Rise of the Citizen Advocate. And if you listen to folks like Steve Bannon, I've got an article by him talking about how school boards are going to change the country. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. Chris Ann Hall is big on that as well. And I have someone that that I met that's in contact with her. And so hopefully we'll get Chris Ann Hall back. Constitutional expert, she's wonderful. But the idea of school boards, my position on government education is that we need to abolish government education, because you've got all these corrupt education officials that are pushing, you know, bogus race theory, oppressor oppressed kind of stuff, the critical, I wouldn't even call it critical race theory. It's criticism race theory. It's like criticizing everything in terms of race. That's the problem. And so my solution, of course, is to abolish the government system and then just work it to a private system. That'd be the ideal. But I didn't really think about this. But I think the folks that are advocating that regular people get on the school boards is just brilliant. And I think that is the answer. And so it happened in Vail, Arizona. You probably heard this story where this woman who got to speak, and she, and then the school board got all scared. It was like, oh, they're a threat to us. It was bogus, of course, But the school board took off. They all ducked out the back door, as brave as they are about controversy. And off they went. And so the folks that were there, the parents said, okay, well, we'll be the school board. If they're not going to be the school board, we'll be the school board. We have a problem here in Santa Rosa County with our school board, where I think the leader of the school board, thinks that parents are basically idiots and they should just, shut up and go away. It's a typical arrogant bureaucrat attitude, right? And it's really crazy. Now, I don't have personal experience with this, but the folks I've been to at the school board, that's the kind of condescending attitude they're telling me about. So, I kind of defer to them, but just to let you know, this is secondhand. But I'm sure this is the case with school boards everywhere, because they usually, it's like the PhDs in education will come along and say, well, we've got PhDs in education. We've studied the education matter for decades. We know more than you. You're just a parent. So if you just leave it to us, we'll educate your kids just fine. So just, basically go away, shut up and let us do our thing. And, don't watch the videos of your kids in school. Don't watch the online learning because, they know best, right? And, well, that's the attitude throughout government. And parents are saying, well, wait a minute. You're turning our kids into idiots, which is you get the right to school. You get all these other things. But a lot of parents don't have time to homeschool, right? So what do? You get with other parents, you form your own school. But I think the school boards, because we've already got the infrastructure of education, we just need to restructure it. And so, I got to write this. I just thought something funny here last night on the news. It was One American News defining what Democrats think of as infrastructure. Basically, everything infrastructure except roads and bridges. any social spending they have is infrastructure, right? So I'm going to go, I got to turn my page away from my guest list here. So I'm going to remind myself to talk about infrastructure. Infrastructure. We'll do that a little bit later. It's kind of an improvised morning because, like I say, I just found out as I'm on the air that, I got half an hour I get to chat with you. So this is kind of cool. All right. So these arrogant people, whether it's a school board or a county commission or a city council or a state legislature or Congress or even the thief in chief, the arrogant, Caesar of the White House, the usurper, the fake, the fraud, the thief in chief who's in the White House writing executive orders that have no legal justification because he's certainly not president, all the way up the chain, there's an arrogance. There's an arrogance that we know best. Just shut the hell up, do what we say, especially from the left. And the left, as they say, has overplayed their hand. They've overplayed it so much, we know what they're doing, and we're disgusted. What's interesting about the lockdowns, I was thinking of this as I heard that Governor Whitch Widmer, Governor Whitch Widmer of Michigan, once again went to a party with a bunch of friends, sitting close together without masks. Oh, you hypocrite. Okay. It's fascinating that they love to have fun. And so the ruling class, as they think of themselves, so for them, they can break any rule. They can do whatever they want. They can party and enjoy life. They can get the best of everything. They can have their cars. They can have their caviar. They can have their, Dom Perignon flown in from France chilled. And that's okay. All right. But for you peasants, all right, you peasants out there, it's just work and taxes. And once you're too old to pay taxes, you're supposed to die. Okay. I mean, that's the socialist model, everything for the elites and for everybody else, work, pay taxes. And when you're too old for taxes, you're supposed to die. All right. And that's why Social Security is social and not individual. You folks that think you can live on Social Security, you got to understand that has nothing to do with individual security and everything to do with Social Security. Well, what is Social Security? Well, it's a second income tax. So you're paying into a second income tax, a small portion of which they give back to you from what you could have earned if you just put the money in an investment account, you know, by the S&P 500. You know, you'd be doing far better than you would on Social Security. If you're of limited funds and they're already taking money out from you, you know, I mean, I'd do that for me now. I mean, at my rather, well, not advanced age, but I'm certainly, you know, on the high side of middle age here. You know, I'd even do it now. I said, hey, go ahead, put on my, whatever you're taking the Social Security, you know, put it in an S&P 500 account. I'll be fine. That would just add, you know, more to my earnings as time goes on. I don't intend on retiring, by the way, because I'm having way too much fun here. And so that's one of the beauties, too, is what are they going to do if people don't want to retire? You know, this is going to be really interesting. You know, so we just keep working, all right? And we're having fun at it. And all of a sudden, you know, these really smart old people out there, you know, telling these young deep state whippersnappers what's going on. Well, something I found fascinating at the rally is the fact that people don't want to just sit and listen to speeches. The days of being a passive conservative, a passive independent, a passive libertarian, or as I call myself, a constitutional independent, those days are gone. The days of journalists, conservative journalists being objective, those days are gone. Okay. As much as I love One American News, the idea that they talk about, we're going to be the most objective journalists. We're just going to give you the facts. Okay. I'm sorry, but it's too late for that. All right. That was 20 years ago, and that's a nice lofty goal, but it doesn't exist anymore. So what you really need to do, One American News, because that's the only news network I have any hope for, Newsmax is sold out. Fox, God knows what they're doing. And of course, as far as the others go, they're just a mouthpiece for the Chinese Communist Party. You know, why do you think CNN has a red flag? Did you figure this out yet? Okay, whenever you see red, why do you think Bill Clinton, you know, who's the master of symbolism, guy's really bright, you know, despite the fact that, you know, he likes 19-year-old interns. He's a, you know, virtual pedophile. But he's a smart guy, okay? And so when Bill Clinton noticed that the presidential maps during the elections, that one year the Democrats would be red and the next year the Republicans would be red, and it would flip back and forth. So every presidential election, they flip back and forth. Okay. And so he said, wait a minute, let's have some fun with this. Let's make the Republican states permanently red and the Democrat states permanently blue. Now, why would he do that? All right. All you folks that understand symbolism know that red always means communist, socialist. Red is the color of the left. So if he can put it on the right, it goes to further the idea that, like, Hitler was a right-wing dictator, which, of course, he wasn't. He was a left-wing dictator because there are no right-wing dictators. You know, right-wing is anarchist, and an anarchist is the opposite of a dictator, you know, because there's no power. There's no law. You know, anarchy is no law, no control, no nothing. You know, it's anarchy. That's why they call it that. Right? Anyway, so the symbolism of Bill Clinton, the abuser of women, the raper of women, whatever else he's done, allegedly, and I'll throw that in there, too, just in case. Yeah, I still feel sorry for Monica Lewinsky. I'm sorry. I just do. I mean, it's off topic, but, you know, poor kid, poor adult now. So, you know, it's like, well, that's the problem with the internet. One mistake and everybody knows about it for the rest of your life. We're kind of in that weird thing. You know, I wonder if that had happened to, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, well, I'm just kind of speculating here. Anyway, let's get back on topic. So people are they want more. They're not satisfied by being told, you know, by their politicians, even good conservative politicians, they're not satisfied with being told, you know, I will do this for you. People are saying, well, I don't want this done for me. You know, well, and this is, I mean, it's perfect for Action Radio because it's the perfect time for folks to have a vehicle, have a means, have a mechanism by which they can express how they determine to be governed, how they consent to be governed. You know, our philosophy here, our mission statement, we the people, give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. And, you know, I forgot the rest. Yeah, I got the rest of the quote here. I always get the first half and I forget the second half. The second half is just as important. So let me quickly whip around my computer and pull up, you know, the stuff here. I don't want to get the exact wording. It's not that I've completely forgotten the subject. So our governing principle, we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. And of course, I mentioned that a bunch of times, you know, on promos and things like that. But think about that. Think about that for a second. You know, that's we the people, okay? So if we the people are submitting the laws that we consent to be governed by to government, I mean, how much more activist can you get than that? All right. Now, obviously, we're not going to dictate to the legislature. That's why we have a legislature. We're not dictating them saying pass these laws. That's ridiculous. That would violate the system. That would violate the Constitution. What we're saying is this is what we consent to. Okay. And obviously, it's not all the people saying that because that would never happen. But we're saying the people that support the things that we support here at Action Radio, this is what we consent to. And I think millions of people across the country will support that because the things that we talk about here and write about here are nonpartisan. They apply to everybody. You know, they're promoting the general welfare, not the specific welfare of certain individuals, corporations, special interest groups, or things like that. They're for everybody. And because of that, I think they're going to be wildly popular. Just a question of us getting known. And that's going to happen too. Some interesting things in the works I can't tell you about yet. Anyway, but like I say, a lot happened, and it was just a perception. It was a perception that that people are doing things, and I met some of the advocates that are doing things. They had tables, okay? It was really cool. So people that are getting out there doing things at school board meetings, people who are doing things at city council meetings, and people who are doing things at county commission meetings, local governments, the place where you can have the most impact. You know, it's like we have in Milton, we have the yellow shirts, you know, the folks that you know, have we do not consent on their shirts. And they're the ones that went to the mask mandate meeting. So there's supposed to be a mandatory mask mandate in Milton. There's too many M's, but alliteration there. So they're supposed to have this permanent mask mandate. And a bunch of folks went there, and rightly so, and said, you know what? This ain't happening. We don't want this. And city council wisely deferred to the fact that they were overwhelmingly outnumbered by people that did not want a mask mandate and voted against the mask mandate, much to the chagrin of the mayor, who's, you know, in the chain of command and likes the authority to tell people what to do, even though masks do nothing except, you know, make the disease last longer, spread it faster, and cause all kinds of other health problems. Right? I mean, that's the whole – if you haven't figured it out yet, the purpose of masks is to ruin the health, ruin the psychology, you know, make you depressed, isolate you from your fellow person, raise your stress level, you know, raise your fear level, lower your resistance to disease, and make you more vulnerable to COVID. Now, why would they do that? Okay, think about this for a second. Why would the government, you know, particularly Dr. Fascist, why would Dr. Fascist want to actually raise your anxiety? Well, because he wants to sell more vaccines. He's nothing but a psychopathic, genocidal vaccine drug pusher. That's what he is. Okay. And people are rising up against that. So there's a really fascinating thing that's happening right now between Dr. Rand Paul and Dr. Anthony Fascist. You know, and so Rand Paul said, I'm not taking a vaccine. Why should I? I've got natural immunity. My immunity is better than the vaccine is going to provide anyway. You know, he says that once you've had COVID, and I would say 99.999% of the population of the United States has either had COVID. A lot of them had it, didn't know it. Or are resistant to it, or were exposed to it, nothing happened. Okay. So with those kind of numbers, with the ridiculously high numbers, why would you want a vaccine? Why would you want a vaccine when it's already proven that hydroxychloroquine kills the virus? All right. Hydroxychloroquine, zinc sulfate, azithromycin. Dr. Relton Marseille and Dr. Zelenko here proved it. They proved it back in February and March, you know, in 2020. All right. So there was no need for a lockdown or a mask mandate because we could have killed this thing in 2 weeks. You know, that 15 days to slow the spread could have been 15 days of hydroxychloroquine, zinc sulfate, and azithromycin, and there would be no pandemic. It would have been over. It would have been over in 2 weeks because it would have been killing everybody. So $20 per person. You know, can you imagine that? If they spent $20 per adult, you know, and I don't know what that amounts to. Wait, let me get a calculator. All right, so we've got 330 million people. Let me see if my calculator has enough digits. 330. Let's say 300 million. We're not going to worry about the kids just yet. 300, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 million people times $20. What's that, $150 million? Yeah, okay, there we go. Or $1.5 billion. That's nothing compared to how much that is spent. So anyway, for $20 per American adult, you could have cured COVID. Okay. So all this rest of this stuff is crazy. All right. So that's what's going on. Let me start an article. That's my basic proposition. I was going to save it for the last hour, but since we had the opportunity to do it now, I figured, okay, let's get into this. But that's what's going on, is that you people, I love saying that, you people aren't satisfied. You don't want to sit around. You want to do stuff. And so, again, if you want to do more than, you know, you're given the opportunity to do, then come join us here at Action Radio. take a look at our bills. Go to writeyourlaws.com. That's www.writeyourlaws, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. And take a look at the bills we have. If you see one you like, and I know you will, then find it, copy it, share it with your friends, share it with your family, share it with Congress, share it with state legislatures, share it everywhere, share it with media, and tell people that there's a revolution going on. And what I'm hoping we will be is the is kind of one of like the guiding, you know, guideposts, the one of the focusing directional things. So in other words, we take all this energy that's out there, and we say, okay, well, we can write bills, we can lobby bills, we can you know, show the government how we consent to be governed. It's an amazing potential. And I think I finally timed something right in my life, you know, so I'm in the right place at the right time with the right radio show, with the right citizen legislature, with the right group of national advocates, with the right frustration, and they want to move. And I think part of that, you know, I have to thank Joe Biden. I mean, I really do. I have to thank the thief in chief, because he's pissed off so many people across the country by stealing the White House and then being stupid enough to not know what he's doing there. So to the fact that the Democrats stole the White House, put an imbecile in as a usurper in chief, who's making all kinds of mistakes and rubber stamping stuff from probably Dr. Jill Biden, you know, Kamala Harris, the illegal alien, slave family owning, you know, party girl. That's what I think of the vice president, right? Who's not really the vice president. This is embarrassing. You know, Americans are embarrassed. They're embarrassed to have the world look at us and go, look who you've got in your White House, you idiots. We don't like to be thought of as idiots. And so Joe Biden has pissed off most of the country. Wait until the Trump rallies start again. I don't think the media has any idea what's going to happen. But the question is, and even with Donald Trump, he's still, you know, anybody that wants to govern is missing the point of this country. You know, it's not for you to govern. It's for us to tell you how we want to be governed. And I'm not the only voice, and I don't have a monopoly on wisdom. Why do you think I do so much by consensus? You know, but the more consensus we have, the more people involved, the more voices saying this is how we consent to be governed, you know, the better the decisions. All right. So this is what's going to happen. It's going to be fascinating. Let me start an article that I found a while back. And we'll get more of this. We're going to have Dr. Peter Pride join us in a few minutes here. But this is so cool. And we'll get to it in a bit. Actually, I want to play something for you first. I should probably play you our new public service announcement when it comes to vaccines. And this is a serious one. A lot of times I play stuff that's funny. This isn't funny. And so I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. Yeah, and everything I told you there is backed up by Dr. Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, Dr. Zelenko, as far as, you know, cures go, and a bunch of other folks who don't get the public attention that they deserve in the news, because the news is you know, with the psychopathic genocidal vaccine drug pusher, Dr. Mengele fascist, you know, otherwise known as Anthony Fauci. Okay, and I'll stand by those words. Go ahead. You can broadcast. I said that. I don't care. Anyway, I found an article. This is a few days old. It's May 17th. And this is in Uncover DC, one of my favorite websites. It's by, let me move some stuff over here. Hang on. By Robert Patrick Lewis. And it says, open position needs filling immediately, conservative activists. It's kind of what inspired the show today, partially, Bet in the rally, too. He says, is it a he? Let me just make sure. Yeah, Robert. Okay, good. He says, the very word brings shudders and thoughts of disgust to any good, God-fearing, conservative American. Activists. Hearing it brings up mental images of Saul Alinsky, Bill Ayers, those smelly basement dwellers of Antifa, and any University of Chicago, Berkeley, or insert entitled rich, white, you know, dirtbag activists here, trust funder, with nothing better to do with their lives than try to burn the world down around them. But perhaps the result of conservatives thinking of the word activist as a dirty word is the reason we're getting our asses kicked up and down the social sphere. And again, I've told you, I think that journalists, journalists at One American News and the genuine conservative news sites like Gateway Pundit and some of the other folks out there that are doing some amazing work, Breitbart, stop calling yourselves journalists, okay? You need to start calling yourselves conservative news advocates. In other words, you take the news and you advocate solutions. And a lot of those solutions are going to be legislative, and a lot of those legislative solutions you're going to get right here at Action Radio, because that's what we do. We provide legislative solutions to the problems that no one's even thought to ask about yet. So we've already solved a bunch of problems that you haven't even thought of. Okay, that's how far ahead we are. That's what makes being, you know, part of Action Radio so exciting. Okay, back to the article. The media is full of leftist advocates. Dare I say communist advocates? All right, I'll say it. The media is full of communist advocates. Be brave there, Robert. Anyway, Hollywood is full of leftist advocates. Professional sports are full of leftist activists. The Democrat Party is absolutely full of virtue-signaling Marxists and leftist activists. Fortune 500 company boardrooms are now full of leftist activists. The GOP locker room, on the other hand, is full of spineless surrender monkeys more concerned with the wrong people's opinion of them than they are of taking action to actively solve the problems that they whine and wail about during hits on Hannity and Maria Bartiromo. That's absolutely true. And we're sick and tired of the whiners. This is why all of us are taking this into our own hands, why we, the people, are saying to you, the leaders, lead, follow, or get out of the way. And the way you lead is you take what we're giving you and you go from there. All right. Back to the article here. Most conservative pundits don't dare push the Overton window, step out of line of the approved messaging, and are downright terrified of giving their audience any action items or specific instructions on things that need to be done. Which is exactly the opposite of this show. This is why this is so funny. Right? Lest the leftist cancer mob come to their homes and pressure their bosses and advertisers to take away their paychecks. Well, fortunately, I'm independent, and I've already talked to Blog Talk Radio, and we've got a great understanding. As long as I don't violate their rules, you know, they'll stand behind me. And I'm not going to violate the rules. No advocating violence, you know, there's sort of like a general clause about, you know, not saying anything offensive. I think a lot of things I say are offensive to people that need to be offended, okay? So there's a value judgment. There's a moral dilemma. Are you being offensive if you say something to somebody that genuinely needs to be offended? Yeah, that's a good question. All right, let's get Josie on the line, who was there at our table, at our Action Radio table, being an advocate that this article says, you know, conservatives need to be more of. Good morning, Josie. Thanks for your help, by the way. I really appreciate it.
Good morning. I had a good time, and I don't know why you were bored, because I thought it was so good when this old speaker came out. Of course, that's my opinion. And we stayed till 9 o'clock.
Oh, wow. Well, good for you. I'm glad you did. Yeah.
It was fun.
Maybe it's for the same reason that I don't like watching concerts. I have to be in them. I don't like watching parades. I have to be in them. I don't like listening to speeches. I have to make them. I'm a participant.
Hey, you know, what? Like they say, different stroke for different folks. So.
Oh, yeah. I just get bored listening to other people speak. I'm sorry.
I'm sure other musicians get bored when you're playing guitar too, so you know what I mean? Who knows?
Oh, bite your tongue.
But I'm very, very disappointed that nobody knew about this event, and I didn't even know what it was, because some of my friends keep asking me, what kind of a festival? I said, I don't know. It's a festival, I keep saying. But I think I heard like the day before on Friday that there might be some Trump supporters coming, and I'm like, I really did not know the name of the event, or nobody posted it, nobody said anything. I don't know. It's just
weird. We talked about it for about a week. I heard Yeah, I heard about it a week ahead of time, and we had some of the organizers on. It was very last minute. Again, I think it was supposed to be in Pensacola, and there was some issue. It couldn't be there, so they moved it to Milton. And it was, you know, the buses, I think, got there kind of late, so that's why it went till 9 o'clock. But when I say bored, you know, the event was wonderful. I loved all the people I talked to. I love the people that came to our table. We've got some incredible connections now. We've got two pages of emails, of phone numbers of people that I'm going to be contacting that already have contacted.
Good, you know,
and so I'm following up on all the folks that that contacted me. Hopefully they're listening now. So you want to call in. I'm not going to mention your name unless you guys call in and say, you know, here I am. You know, I was there at your table. So I'm really big on keeping confidence until I know that it's okay to go public. But we had some just amazing folks. But the speeches, to me, that's anticlimactic because we'd already done our advocacy. We'd already shown, you know, people who we were at Action Radio. I'll tell you, the interesting part was that I had nothing. I had no brochures and no cards. Everything was done by cell phone. So people were just taking pictures of everything. There's no fuss, no muss. I thought that was a kind of cool way to do it.
Which that's a new thing. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you go. I had a great time, and we really, really reached so many people, and people asking a lot of questions, actually. So it was very good.
We did reach a lot of people, and we're going to reach a lot more too. There's some things that came out of it I can't tell you about yet, but I will. It's really exciting. So things in the works. Anyway, I have Dr. Pry, and I got a huge question for him when we get going, and I'll be back at the top of the hour. We can talk again.
I'll be listening.
All right, thanks very much. Bye. Take care, Josie.
Bye.
What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry.
So you sent me an amazing article, and what I want to get to at some point in our half hour, if we have a chance, is the last part of it, talking about toward an electrical revolution, because that to me is the most fascinating. But I want to let you get started with whatever you'd like to report on, sir. But there's some really interesting stuff in that last part.
Well, thank you. Yes, that's a report that has been picked up. It was just published this morning by Real Clear Defense, much to my surprise, because it's such a lengthy, you know, it's report length. It's not article length. You know, it's basically about 8 pages, which is usually too long for, you know, for most newspapers. But Real Clear Defense picked it up and published it in whole.
Excellent.
You know, which was good. And it's entitled Cyber and EMP Preparedness, an Open Letter to the Honorable Ann Neuberger, the Deputy National Security Advisor for Cyber and Emerging Technology. And, you know, I actually sent it to her as a closed memo, a confidential memo about a month ago and got no response at all, okay? So I decided, well, maybe this will get their attention by publishing.
I can tell you why.
It is a, right, it's an open report. And my concern is that in the aftermath of the SolarWinds attack, cyber attack that just happened in December, you know, that the U.S. government acknowledges is the most, up to that point, was the most aggressive cyber attack made on the United States that penetrated hundreds of departments and agencies and 18,000 contractors and utilities. And then in the midst of the Ukrainian crisis, you know, Russia basically threatening that a cyber war, an all-out cyber war between the United States and Russia is inevitable, and they would win it because they're better postured to win it. And then a few weeks after that, the Colonial Pipeline hack, which is now the most aggressive cyber attack that has been made because they actually shut down, you know, this major oil artery that conveys 45% of the petroleum products to our civilians, most of the press doesn't even comprehend the significance of that. Yes, it drove up the price of oil and it caused inconvenience for a lot of Americans and panic buying. But the main thing about Colonial Pipeline from a military perspective is that if we wanted to go and help Ukraine or defend NATO, you know, we couldn't do that with Colonial Pipeline shut down because it also supplies almost half of the petroleum we need to our East Coast military bases that would project power, you know, to protect Ukraine or to protect NATO. And this is just a few weeks after they threatened, you know, a cyber war against us. So clearly this business about, you know, about this is the Biden administration has tried to blow off the Colonial Pipeline or diminish its significance by suggesting it was just some independent criminal gangs and that this was mainly about ransomware. You know, it was about getting money out of Colonial Pipeline. That wasn't what it was about. That's just part of the cover. You know, they want to provide plausible deniability, but at the same time, if you have half a brain to know that, yes, this was them doing this, even the Biden administration has got to know that. And
well, they do, but it's like they don't want to do anything. They're being, you know, consciously, you know, purposefully blind to it all. I don't know what kind of denial they're in, or they're thinking these are their leftist buddies. How could they do that? You know, the same people that preached, you know, Russian collusion against Trump. I think were Trump in office, you know, you'd have a different take on this. You'd be trying to do something about it, and I'm sure there are generals that are screaming right now, saying, "What the hell is going on with you people?" And one of the things I remember from my flight instruction days, I don't think a lot of people know this, and something I didn't know, which you mentioned, the sort of the intertwined nature of an oil pipeline that also goes to military bases, the air traffic control system. You know, when I was teaching flying and we were doing some pretty long flights, we'd go from military controller to civilian controller and back and forth. That whole infrastructure, something that I'm hoping is guarded, because that's one I know a fair bit about. You know, there's another vulnerable target. There are so many out there that this needs to be taken care of, but the military, you know, if we're entwined in our pipelines, if our public utilities, if our quote, our infrastructure between military bases and civilian, you know, operations are as connected as this pipeline appears to be. And I think that the air traffic control system appears to be, and probably other systems that I don't know about, we got a problem. And we need to fix both ends of it, both the civilian and military. Yeah. Huh.
The magnitude of our unilateral vulnerability to these attacks. You know, because a lot of Americans complain and say, and the Biden administration, when it was in its first week of office, said, well, we're going to retaliate for solar winds, okay? And then, obviously, nothing happened. And every administration seems to have to discover that this vulnerability is largely unilateral, you know, because we're a high-tech society, because we're so dependent, because our critical infrastructures evolved never with national security in mind, you know, that they're run by private sector utilities that put profits before public safety or national security. Certainly they don't regard national security as being at all in their bailiwick. Whereas in places like Russia and China, whenever they build, when they've been building their critical infrastructures, the first thing that they take into account is their national security, because that's what military dictatorships do. They're always thinking in terms of, well, what's this going to do to me in a World War III? And so we have unilateral vulnerabilities here, you know, because they've already protected their stuff and we haven't protected ours. And one of my greatest frustrations here, and one of the reasons I, you know, we wrote this report, you know, is, you know, where's a good socialist when you need one? You know, I mean, the Biden administration wants to be socialist about everything, getting its fingers into things that it has no business getting the government involved in, right? But this is a national security issue. This is something where the government should be taking an assertive, muscular approach and taking the lead on protecting our critical infrastructures. And we'll have to take the lead if it's going to be accomplished. And President Trump was taking that lead. You're absolutely right. When you look at President Trump's EMP executive order and then his executive order for protecting the bulk power energy system, he was aggressively, assertively doing the right thing, doing what government should do, stepping up, because government is responsible. That's the main thing they do in the Constitution, you know, to provide for the common defense by protecting these critical infrastructures, but not the Biden administration. You know, the Biden administration has gone back, you know, to the Obama administration and previous administrations. It's not just the Democrats that have done this, but the Republican administrations too. Ever since George Bush established the Department of Homeland Security, there's been this grand strategy that the government has followed called the public-private partnership concept, okay?
Right.
And in this public-private partnership concept, basically, you know, the government is the junior partner, and it counts on, it says, well, you know, we'll explain to them about things like EMP and cyber warfare and maybe provide them and provide the private sector with information. But it's up to them to take advantage of the information and to voluntarily protect themselves. And that's been our grand strategy, you know, for 20 years since the Bush administration, since the Department of Homeland Security is established. But we can see, you know, from the SolarWinds hack, you know, from the Colonial Pipeline hack, from the ice storm in Texas, you know, where the electric grid isn't even capable of standing up against an ice storm, let alone cyber warfare, or the 2019 rolling blackouts in California because they didn't even protect the grid from high winds that were caused massive wildfires and ended up burning down entire towns like Paradise, California, and killing a lot of people. That after 20 years of the public-private partnership grand strategy, hadn't moved us an inch toward a more secure critical infrastructures, because the private sector doesn't see it as their job. They'll publicly, for public relations purposes and to the government, because they don't want to be regulated, they'll say, yeah, we're on top of it, boss. Don't worry about it. You know, we're protecting ourselves against EMP and cyber and all of these sophisticated threats, and we exercise against them every year. That's what they would say. But you can see that they're not doing anything. You know, it's going to cost them money. They don't want to do it. They don't have the expertise or competence to do it, despite their assertions to the contrary. And in the end of the day, it's the government's job. And so they're really right. And so the whole public-private partnership grand strategy, which the Biden administration has picked up and is continuing, is doomed to fail, you know, because it is the government's job to provide for national security. The government has got to take the lead. And it's easy for the U.S. government bureaucrats, you know, because it enables them, it gives them an excuse to offload the big national security problem onto the shoulders of a private sector that is not competent to do it and doesn't want to do it and isn't doing it. So there is a needed sea change. And an example of how they're going to get it wrong again has just happened because, you know, Biden put out a new executive order, and the essence of this executive order to deal with cybersecurity is to recommend that the private sector have a new position, that they start hiring people called in the old system, they had these things called chief information security officers, and it's called a CISO. And so that all of the utilities and the industries would have information security officers whose job it is would be to advise the industries about how to protect themselves against cyber attacks. And under the new executive order, that's going to change to chief product security officer. And it's supposed to be a broader responsibility where they're not just looking at their IT systems, but, you know, but other systems within the business that's being run, you know, to see, including anything that they manufacture in the way of software, to follow how vulnerable it is and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, in effect, that executive order changes one letter in the initial, but it doesn't change the fundamental flawed concept of offloading national security onto the shoulders of the private sector. You know, these CISOs that we've had for many years now obviously haven't been up to it. And this is not to blame or criticize them, but let's face it, you know, individual corporations and industries, they are not nation states. And if you're trying to put their security people up against Russia, China, North Korea, these are nation states. Their cyber warriors are backed by nation states. This is a lot like trying to the Kmart security guards to be prepared to take on, you know, the Spetsnaz from Russia or the special forces guys from North Korea or China.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Obviously, guess who's going to win that contest? Not us. So they still don't get it. And the other thing that's enormously frustrating is, too, is that, you know, one of President Trump's executive orders, one of the most important ones, was this Executive Order 13920, I think it is. It's the protecting the bulk energy system, protecting the U.S. bulk energy system was its title, and it was supposed to begin the process, the United States making its own SCADAs, making its own transformers, making its own equipment that is critical to the operation of the U.S. electric grid, because we can't trust foreign manufactured equipment, especially equipment from China. And the Biden administration, in its wisdom, suspended that executive order, even in the aftermath of Colonial Pipeline.
Of course they did.
Right.
I can tell you why. And you know why, too.
Oh, because it's a Trump executive order, you know?
So what kind of immaturity is that? That they're doing everything. And Trump did a lot of things right. I mean, he really did. This executive order is one. But what kind of immaturity? What kind of babies do they have in the Biden, you know, insurrection? That just because Trump did it, they're not going to do it, even when he did things right. That's what's causing all our problems in this country right now. They're just doing the opposite of what works. What kind of idiots are these people?
Well, I think they're lawyers. You know, I think that's part of the problem. And that was a problem for President Trump, too, because he never drained the swamp. You know, one of the characteristics of the swamp, that you've got lawyers, you know, doing things that really are not appropriate for a lawyer, that lawyers can't really do and that lawyers don't do well, like run the critical infrastructure and security agency, for example. We've talked on this show before about Chris Krebs. You know, I tried to get them to fire Chris Krebs all through the Trump administration, but they wouldn't fire him. And, you know, who is Chris Krebs? He shouldn't have been running CISA. That, you know, that's the lead agency in the U.S. government for protecting our critical infrastructures. And this guy was a lawyer and a former lobbyist for Microsoft. And he saw he was still working basically as a lobbyist for Microsoft in his role as the director of CISA. And because he saw his job as stopping anything that would force Microsoft or the other or any other company, you know, from being regulated by the government, you know, and carrying on this failed public-private partnership grand strategy and using it to make the U.S. government be as little of a pain in the rear end to the industry, because he knew he was going to go back, and he has gone back after he finally got fired at the end of the Trump administration. For claiming that the election was the cleanest and best election in U.S. history. You know, finally President Trump fired him after he said that, and CISA was supposed to also be responsible for election integrity. You know, and if there's ever a 9/11 commission to investigate what happened during the elections, you know, I'm reasonably certain that Chris Krebs, you'll find, was a conspirator against President Trump to undermine his administration and cheat on the elections.
Mike Pence, but we'll talk about him too.
Yes.
I've got a theory when you're finished your point. Actually, I have two of them that I think you'll find quite interesting.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and give me your, and then I'll talk about Ann Neuberger. Remind me not to forget about her, okay?
No, because I'll put a big note here, Ann Neuberger. The reason you didn't get a response from her is because I read through your report, and there isn't anything there on diversity or white supremacy. That's why you didn't get a response.
about titling the report, you know, mansplaining cyber and EMP preparedness.
Stand back away from the mic, excuse me.
You know, I actually thought about titling it that. That maybe that would
Dr. Prize, mansplain, you children. Yeah. But my theory is, the first of two is that Russia and China being dictatorships, being communist dictatorships, they have a permanent government. If you go into government there and you're in cybersecurity, that's your job for life. So they get the best that they can, and they work their way up to the top. Our government, people go to make money. They go in it to advance their careers, like Chris Krebs, you know, the Monsanto lobbyist is very typical. The people that were in the Food and Drug Administration, Azar, what's his name, that went back to whatever big pharma, you know, vaccine drug pusher he works for now. All these folks, they come in, and you know this too, because you've talked about this, the people that come into like the Armed Services Committee, and then they go work for defense contractors as lobbyists.
Right.
You know, it's this revolving door that our problem with our government, and like I say, I'm for term limits of bureaucrats, but we have a philosophical problem working against ourselves because we don't have people that are permanently interested in advancing the cause of the United States. People are brought into government to advance their own cause, to learn what they can, take what they can, improve their resume, and then go make a bunch of money in the private sector. The United States is not their primary interest. And because of that, that's why we don't have the things that you're talking about. We don't have the infrastructure, the cybersecurity. We don't have a lot of things that we should have and would have if we had people whose job, whose career was based on advancing the things that helped us rather than helping themselves. That's my first theory.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, the federal government is an example of, you know, deep corruption within the federal government, the way it works like that. But it's not even recognized in Washington as corruption. To modify that response, you know, there's supposed to be a cooling off period, if you're a member of Congress, for example, before you go work for a defense contractor. But they still end up going to work for the defense contractors eventually. And there's ways of that they can work for that defense contractor before the cooling off period supposedly ends, you know, and it doesn't apply at all. I mean, the worst violators of this are the congressional staffers. You know, the laws don't apply to the staffers at all. And the staffers are extremely influential. They're actually the ones who really write the bills. You know, very rarely do you have a congressman or a senator who actually writes the bills. The bills are written by the congressional staff, and they are the ones who end up are one of the biggest sources of corruption, you know, in Washington, the ones that get hired off and go working as lobbyists immediately for whatever industry, whether it's the defense industry or the Food and Drug Administration or whatever. And while they're in those positions, you know, they are often biasing the legislation to do the bidding of these industries because they want to get a job in those industries and they already have connections with them. And another point of contrast, going back to the differences between how we do, in this case we're talking about cybersecurity versus or anything, how we do anything in the defense industry or you know, versus our totalitarian adversaries. Not only do they start looking for people like in China and Russia, this is in particular, right in high school, who's mm-hmm. got a proclivity, you know, for being good being a cyber warrior, you know, or being good in engineering or some other topic. You don't get really to choose what you get to do with the rest of your life. They actually make that decision for you, mm-hmm. You know, coming out of high school, and that decides your career path. They send you to university specializing in this, and then you spend the rest of your life doing it. We basically obviously don't do that in this country, but there was a time when at least we had the wisdom to know that you shouldn't be putting people like Chris Krebs in charge of a vital national security, or people like Ann Neuberger, for that matter. I was going to talk about Ann Neuberger. She's another lawyer. You know, she used to run a bookstore in Washington, D.C., and I think that's how she got to know the Obamas or people in the Democrat Party. You know, she used to give erotic readings from novels, and then decided to, just before the Obama administration, went to George Washington and got her degree as a lawyer. And then the Obama administration really kicked her upstairs. An amazing, you know, she had like no background for it. But during the Obama administration, she became a lawyer working in the cyber command of the National Security Agency as a lawyer, not as a cyber warrior directly, but as a person who worked legal and policy issues within NSA. So we've got another lawyer, her, and it's the first cybersecurity czar this country's ever had. That's the first time. And so the choice is to have her, a lawyer, who is not a deep technical expert on these issues. But we weren't always this way. When there was a time when our government was able to accomplish apparent miracles, you know, and they knew that you needed to put super competent people who knew what they were doing in charge of national security programs. And in one of my articles that I also sent you, I noted, for example, that during the World War II Manhattan Project, you know, which was a miraculous project. I mean, it took the idea of the atomic bomb. Nobody even knew if an atomic bomb could be built and if it would work. It was just an idea at the beginning of the Manhattan Project. And it took 3 years for Robert Oppenheimer and Edward Teller, you know, these are, you know, the best physicists we could find in the United States to run the Manhattan Project. And in 3 years, they took it from just being a theory to being actual atomic weapons. Just 3 years. Then the nuclear navy, which was also, you know, could you put nuclear reactors into aircraft carriers and make aircraft carriers nuclear? Could you put nuclear reactors into submarines and make submarines nuclear and revolutionize the navy, make what we call the nuclear navy? Admiral Hyman Rickover was put in charge of that. This guy was an engineer and a nuclear reactor expert himself, and he ran the U.S. That's why we got a nuclear navy very quickly. We sent a man to the moon, you know, not because some lawyer was running NASA, but because Wernher von Braun was running NASA, you know, the greatest, probably the greatest rocket scientist of his generation, and, you know, a deep technical expert in the subject matter. And we don't do that anymore. Now, when it comes to cybersecurity, something obviously vital to our national security, we're putting lawyers like Chris Krebs and Ann Neuberger in charge who are not deep technical experts. And if you actually go below them, you know, they don't actually have deep technical experts working for them either. They have other lawyers or long-term bureaucrats who don't really know. They don't have deep technical expertise in any of the areas that they're working. They tend to be policy people who maybe know the history of the policies they had. And you have to go way down. The people who do have deep technical expertise are not, you know, at the top of the pyramid in the federal bureaucracy. They're worker bees way down at the bottom who tend to get ignored. And that's why we're in such, you know, serious trouble. You know, we've got this strategic culture dominated now by lawyers that has grown up. And, you know, it's a sign of a civilizational crisis that we're facing. That was actually, I think, anticipated by the founders because they, you know, the founders were always afraid of a new aristocracy arising, you know, and that the most likely place that would happen would be in Washington. You know, they feared the concentration of power in Washington, which is where we are today. Power was supposed to be disseminated among the states, and the states is where most governance, you know, would happen. And if that had been the case, we might even have been better off today, even from a cyber perspective, because at least some of the states would probably have gotten it right. You know, there'd be more of a chance with these 50 laboratory experiments for some of the governors to have enough wisdom to say, you know, I'm not going to put lawyers in charge. You know, up in New York and Rhode Island, they've got lawyers in charge, and these guys are really vulnerable. It doesn't work. Maybe I'm going to put a person who's a deep technical expert in cybersecurity in charge of Virginia's, Texas's. And in fact, you kind of see that happening. You know, what's left of our constitutional republic, it is trying to work that way. You know, a friend and colleague of mine, Senator Bob Hall down in Texas, you know, has not been waiting for Washington to try to solve this problem and finally got a bill through the Texas State Senate. It still has to pass the House and it has to be signed into law by the governor. But Texas is not waiting for Washington to solve this problem. They see the writing on the wall, you know, in the aftermath of the Texas ice storm and know that Texas itself, you know, has got to look to its own capabilities to protect itself because the federal government isn't doing it. So the genius of the founders isn't completely dead. You know, there's still a little life left in it in some of these so-called red states. You know, where people understand how the system is supposed to work.
Yeah, there's a lot of life out there. I saw it in the rally, and I saw it not from the speech folks and the leaders, but the people, a lot of folks. This is the right time for Action Radio, let me put it that way. You asked an interesting question, and if you have a few minutes extra, we can go beyond today because there's a couple more things I want to talk about, especially our electrical revolution. But you mentioned something and said, why don't we have an infrastructure? Why don't we, you know, we've got socialists. They should be able to have big government programs. Why aren't they doing it? And as you were talking, I was thinking to myself, just my radical theories that I think you're going to enjoy this. It looks to me like we've been governed by masculine socialists and feminine socialists. Okay. So let me get controversial for a second. For all you folks who are listening, I mean, feel free, you know, write me, call me, I don't care. But you look at folks like FDR and the Bushes, I put them under the masculine socialism category. Roads, bridges, WPA, CCC, the Hoover Dam, you know, or the Bushes, you know, the Patriot Act. You know, I think whatever else they did, NASA, things like that. But it was infrastructure, and with emphasis on the word structure, to actually build stuff. They might have built stuff wrong, you know, like I say, with the Patriot Act and things like that, but they were building stuff. Feminist socialists, I would put Clinton, Obama, Biden, and go back to Johnson with the Great Society program, the fluffy stuff. You know, there was a report on One American News last night, which is contributing to this theory I've just formed, that they were talking about all the liberal Democrat folks that were tweeting out that child care is infrastructure, that redoing the Supreme Court is infrastructure, and all these other things that aren't infrastructure. In fact, the one thing they took out of the infrastructure bill is roads and bridges, things that actually have a structure. So infra, I guess, means interior or within, and structure means building stuff. So the Democrats have taken out all the building, the actual roads and bridges, you know, construction stuff, you know, guy stuff, and they've kept all the fluffy feminine stuff. That's just a theory I came up with this morning just listening to you, but it seems to me that's the problem with the infrastructure is it's gone from structure, from actually, you know, guys building things to, you know, in daycare, childcare, you know, whatever social program, radical programs that they want to do. And that's the difference between masculine socialism and feminist socialism that we're under now with the current Biden administration, because there isn't a single dominant guy, masculine person in his entire administration, including Biden himself. There you go.
Yeah, that's an interesting theory. It's a good. It does seem to fit the facts, and how we've gone forward, and the focus is on what you call feminist socialism too, is on trying to rearrange human relations and remake the human being. Their idea of structure is completely alien to what you might consider, you know, the masculine view of it, you know, which is real structures, you know, bridges, electric grids, our cybersecurity programs, the nuts and bolts of how the country works, versus trying to change the nature of human beings themselves and mess around with
the relationships,
even our sexuality. even the sexuality. Now we've got 26 genders that's supposed to be the basis for call it human infrastructure, as it were, you know. And even this latest new Biden cybersecurity executive order fits into what you're talking about, where they change it from a chief information security officer to a chief product security officer, and that person. I mean, it's basically monkeying around with a person and what his duties are supposed to be, and hoping that kind of a change is going to make some kind of a difference when it won't at all. It doesn't recognize the fundamental problem we have with the nuts and bolts of how our critical infrastructure works. It's not a people problem, chiefly. You know, it's a structural problem that we've got with the infrastructures that needs to be fixed. We've got to put, you know, blocking devices and Faraday cages and governors into things, into the mechanical things, you know, that will stop, you know, cyber intrusions from getting into the system, so they can do things like blow up the Colonial Pipeline next time, as opposed to temporarily shutting it down.
Yeah.
So
that's what our foreign
policy
is too. It's like a feminized foreign policy. You know, we have to have good relationships. We can't offend. We can't, we all have to get along as opposed to this is the way it is, pal. You know, the Trump would be the masculine foreign policy and Biden would be the feminine foreign policy.
A foreign policy where, we don't even allow ourselves to think of America as a peer, and that we're equal, at least with these. No, we're inferior. And we have to go on our knees before the United Nations and apologize for being a racist society. And it's a very neurotic kind of a foreign policy, not even a feminist foreign policy.
It was a different feminist in the bad sense of the word, in the sense of the word that destroys what we have, or anything that's masculine, anything that's competitive, anything that is structural,
right.
Anything that you do
toxic
is somehow bad.
America has been guilty of toxic masculinity.
Exactly.
And they've got to apologize for those decades of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's make a real clear distinction then, because I think the future of the Republican Party is the women who are coming forward, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, because the guys are a bunch of wimps. I've started calling them the gelding-operated party, and they're definitely the gelding-operated party. Let me say it one more time. But the women that are coming forward are fabulous, okay? But you can have women with a structural point of view, of an America First point of view. So this isn't limited to men and women. This is in terms of viewpoint. Are you looking at this from a feminist destructive point of view, toxic masculinity, or you're looking at from a masculine point of view, it's competitive. We're going to be the top. We're going to be the best. We're not going to have these problems. We don't have to worry about Russia and China because we're going to have better stuff than they do. It's an attitude. It's not a gender. I want to make that real clear. You ready for the toward an electrical revolution? Because this is great stuff.
Yes, yeah, sure. Sure, of course.
Let me start the first paragraph. Go ahead. All right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so just the very first paragraph. In the long term, the United States needs a revolution in the way electricity is generated and distributed, moving toward greatly increased generating power and more decentralized distribution to meet the energy demands of an increasingly electrified civilization while better protecting that civilization from a solar or man-made blackout apocalypse. Well, let's go about the way we're going to generate it, because I found the rest of this fascinating. So if you could describe, the next evolution in how we generate power and that power grid and that power system, what would you do and what would it look like?
Well, I instead of putting and we have an opportunity to do this because of all the trillions of dollars the Biden administration plans to spend on infrastructure modernization. $100 billion of it is going to the electric utilities, the electric infrastructure, but almost entirely into solar and wind, which doesn't work, which is just technologically limited and can never, will become the basis for it. But, what I'm recommending is small modular reactors is one of the chief ways of doing it. Small modular nuclear reactor technology is really revolutionary now, and it's on the threshold of it's greener than if that's one of your high top criteria, it's greener than solar or wind because it's not like the big nuclear reactors that we have now where you've got a radioactive waste disposal problem. These they recycle the fuel. The fuel would be endlessly recycled through these small modular reactors, through most of the designs.
Yeah.
And, until it's eventually inert. So you don't have a nuclear waste disposal problem with these small modular reactors. And these reactors can be very small. They can be very small. There's,
How small? How small? What are we talking about here?
Well, there's one reactor that's so small that they called it the nuclear battery, okay? And this is actually ready to be manufactured next year if they want to do it. And it can fit into a large room, one nuclear reactor that could fit into a large room and power, basically a small town or a whole military base. It can generate 10 megawatts and fit inside of something like, 15-foot by 20-foot room that would be 15-foot tall. And, you know, that's how small it is. And, you know, something like that could be affordable and proliferated throughout small-town America. So mm-hmm. you could basically get rid of the big grid by means of these things. Another greener approach.
But one quick question, though. So these don't have to be part of a grid. These can be like independent generating units. They don't have to be connected to the other one.
Absolutely. That's the big attraction of them. They're basically what are called microgrids. You know, so so you don't need the big grid anymore. You know, you can draw your electricity from this and mm-hmm. run a town, a military base. You know, one of the proposals in the report is that we start off putting small modular reactors on all our military bases, say on 100 of the continental United States military bases, because
one at the airport
right now.
You know, let's put them there.
Well, we could do that too, but I'm concerned about our military bases because right now the military bases draw all their energy. 99% of their energy comes from the big grid. And if you shut down the civilian grid, we basically lose our military and our ability to project power.
Okay.
So there's an emergency here, you know, to try to make these guys energy independent and, you know, put small modular reactors on the military bases so that by cyber attack or EMP, you know, you can't. Oh, the other thing about these small modular reactors, because of their small size, you know, some of them are actually already being designed with EMP protection in them. You know, so that these things are inherently hard against EMP from the get-go. You don't have to go back and retrofit them with anything. And indeed, you could make, when you can fit it inside of one room, you could build a building that's just like a giant Faraday cage at very low cost that would provide additional protection to reactors, which are already inherently hard against EMP and cyber warfare. But that way, not only would you secure our military power so that we would be able to defend ourselves, but the military bases, you know, could become islands of survivability, you know, so that they could you could connect the small modular reactors to the local big grid as well, so that you'd be able to support the civilian population, the county, you know, that base is located in, and these islands of survivability would solve you'd have 100 of them spread out all over the United States, and that would solve the black start problem so that we wouldn't have to deal with the problem. We don't even know if we can come back. If the whole grid goes down into blackout from an EMP or cyber attack, it's never been exercised, never been done, but it would solve that problem. And we might be able, and if we, with good planning, you know, we could quickly bring back the whole society, the whole national system, you know, through these small modular reactors that are located on military bases. Eventually, in the long term, what I'd like to see is the disappearance of the big grid so that every town in the United States would be able to have its own independent energy source and people could decide for themselves, you know, what kind of an electrical system, you know, how are we going to do the billing and all of that. They'd be in control, more in control of their own lives, so that they're not dependent upon. Being dependent on the big grid also means being dependent on Washington, basically, because that brings into your life things like the U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. These are the guys who have been responsible for failing us in Texas and California, throughout the country. You know, their regulatory process is basically letting the utilities get away with murder, literally getting away with murder over the years. And so it would make the politics, it would take the politics out of energy and put the decisions about energy back into the lives of the American, into the hands of the American people, which is consistent with the founders' vision of how this country is supposed to work. You know, it's a way of decentralizing decision making, you know, decentralizing power and returning power back to the people. And there's another way of doing it, not just through small modular reactors, but in addition to that, you know, we could be on the threshold of a hydropower revolution. You know, the cleanest and most resilient form of energy is hydropower, harnessing dams and generating electricity in that way. And they're one of the technologies that's being developed are super efficient turbines. Right now, we have harnessed only a small percentage of the dams in the United States, only a small percentage of the lakes and rivers, but these super efficient hydropower turbines can convert, you know, like 95% of rivers and streams that don't lend themselves to big hydropower projects, but to small ones. And again, this is a microgrid concept, so that if a town is near a small river, you know, these turbines are so efficient, you know, that you can actually harness the power in that river to power up a town. And again, it's a way of decentralizing the power, returning the decisions back into the hands of the people, and making small town America energy independent, you know, from the big grid, getting away from the big grid. Obviously, there's going to be a transitional period where the big grid is still around, but I believe that through technologies like this, and yeah, you could include more efficient solar and wind, but that's not going to be the answer to the future. I mean, you know, they've been putting
answer.
So much.
People want them on their homes,
partial,
you know, solar panels on their homes,
answer.
You know, and I wouldn't discount that, but, you know, you're basically talking about the water wheel concept of rivers. Yeah. Okay.
But it can make a, you know, solar and wind can make a contribution to this new vision of a revolutionary America, but it's not, but they're barking up the wrong tree. The left green environmentalists are promoting the wrong thing. Because the we've invested most of our scientific development and hopes into solar and wind, so they're basically topped out in terms of what we can do with them technologically. Maybe at some time in the future there'll be other breakthroughs, but right now, you know, we've been trying to make these things the technological breakthroughs for many decades, and what you see is what you get. And what you get isn't very good, as we could see in Texas. You know, the windmills don't even pay for themselves, as a matter of fact. They're so inefficient.
Well, I'm not a big wind fan, unless you have a small generator on your rooftop. I got a couple of questions. I want to let you go and get back to our activist topic here. But if you just have another minute, can a small company – thank you. Can a small company run one of these, you know, room-sized nuclear reactors? Or does it have to be strictly government – you know, run? Can like a private corporation, you know, the whatever corporation of whichever town, they have their nuclear plant in their room. Can that be done successfully and safely?
Yes, it can be done. It can be done that way. I mean, basically, that's what's done with the big nuclear reactors now. You know, the big nuclear reactors belong to particular utilities. You know, they're regulated by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, but they're not government people. You know, they work for particular utilities, and these would be much easier to run, you know, by much smaller groups and organizations. You could have, you know, people who are employed by a town or employed by a small city, you know, who are providing so that small town or small city would have its own, they would be their own electric utility and have trained personnel. I mean, it would be a great thing for former U.S. Navy guys who worked on nuclear submarines, for instance, as a pool. You know, to draw from that kind of a talent as a starting thing. But you don't need the whole idea here is to get away from not only get away from the big grid technologically, but to get away from the politics of Washington and the influence and power of Washington that it has over the lives of the people right now. And that would really be. I think that kind of a technological and energy revolution would also contribute to the political revolution that Trump supporters and paleo conservatives like myself have been looking for, where we are building a society, including through technology, that's more consistent with what the founders wanted in the first place. You know, decentralized power into the hands of the people. Get government, you know, shrink, get Washington out of our knickers everywhere that we can.
Yeah. So just a couple more practical things. Would they require a containment vessel, like a huge concrete thing around them? Or are we moving beyond that kind of thing now?
They're called small modular reactors because they come from the factory with their containment vessel. I mean, and they can be transported on a truck. And basically, you know, you just installed someplace, and then you hook it up. Yeah, they're already designed with everything you need.
Wow. This is like the old homes used to, you know, ship it and you build it in your yard. And the last question I have is fueling and waste. You know, the fuel, are they complex to fuel? Do you have to have special trucks, special things to bring in the nuclear fuel rods? And would they need a water supply, like a river or something? Or I guess that's three questions then. And then the waste, how do they deal with that? Oh, you already told me about the waste because they keep reusing the fuel rods.
Well, you would need
the fuel rods there.
Well, yeah, the fuel rods are there inside the system. And, periodically, maybe I think it's every 10 years you take the fuel rods out, and then the fuel rods would probably go to some other facility where they would be reprocessed,
okay,
but then delivered back to the nuclear reactor to begin the next phase of use of that material until they become inert, and then you could give them to the you could give them to the military if you wanted. You know, we use for example, we use inert uranium in our anti-tank weapons, because it's so
cannon
dense.
Shells. Yeah.
Right. You know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's basically been exhausted of its radioactive, basically back down to the level of natural uranium.
Okay.
You know, like U-238, which is the radioactivity from that is extremely low.
Hmm. And I guess the last one is water. Do they need a water supply, cooling towers, things like that?
Right, but the water supply wouldn't have to draw from a lake or a river.
Okay.
You know, you basically have a tower, a water tower, and the water could be recycled as well.
Hmm. So how does a nuclear submarine do it? Does it take in seawater, cool it, and exhaust the seawater that's non-radioactive, or how do they do it?
Yes, that's what they do. They draw on seawater. And the drinking water is also supplied that way. You know, the heat from their nuclear reactor, you know, basically gets the salt out of the water, you know, so that you can use that to generate the steam, you know, that drives turbines, but also the crew drinks that water, and it provides. You know, the reactor also provides the drinking water for the crew.
I don't think people know that they might be drinking water that was processed through a nuclear plant. That's going to be interesting when that hits the headlines. Wow. That's all I have. This has been fascinating. Thank you for your extra time. I really appreciate it. But I think technology will save us. Just like, you know, when they were worried in London that, they were going to be under 10 foot of horse poop. You know, by 1950, you know, that's what they figured in 1850.
Right.
100 years from now, we'll be under 10 feet of horse poop. Of course, the automobile came along and changed all that. You know, in the same way, these small nuclear reactors, you know, there's nothing wrong with nuclear. It's amazing how this could work. Small reactors, decentralized, independent units, you know, run by corporations, you know, under, you know, oversight. This is great. I'm excited. It's a great future. Yeah. All right, sir. I have to let you go. This has been absolutely brilliant.
If the Biden administration listens and does it.
Well,
but,
no, they won't.
Anyway.
Well, they're going to be replaced anyway, I hope, in a few months. But, you know, yeah.
Yes, we need to get President Trump back. And so, or, you know, someone who shares his vision for that to be realized. And I noticed at the beginning that you were talking to Josie, right?
Uh-huh.
In the previous segment. Okay, my favorite.
Yeah.
Trump soldier.
Josie,
anyway.
Here's your chance. Okay. Well,
yes.
I could get you two together if you ever want to both talk. I can ask Josie to join you for a report, and you guys can we can do one and just like hash out Trump stuff. That'd be fun. Or
sure.
At least a segment.
I think
yeah.
I'd enjoy that. All right. Okay. Well, thank you for having me, my friend.
Thank you for another brilliant report. I really appreciate all your information. And we'll do it again next week.
Okay. Look forward to it. Bye bye.
Thank you very much. And that is Dr. Peter Pry out of Washington, just an absolute genius and a pleasure to have on the show. Let me play some fun things here, and we will be back in just a little bit.
Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, No family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Which is exactly what the show is about today, the rise of the citizen advocate. More coming. I'll be back in a bit. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
All right, we are back. The lines are open, as they say. Anybody wants to join me, feel free. 215-383-3832. To my new listeners, whom I met this weekend at the rally, welcome aboard. Welcome to Action Radio. This is what we do here. Such a good time. That was fascinating. I had no idea I was going to be talking about, you know, small room-sized nuclear reactors today. You know, and that's the fun of the show. I really, you know, our reporters, they don't tell me ahead of time. I want to be as surprised as you are. I love this information. And who thought I'd be talking about feminist socialism versus masculine socialism? That just cracked me up. So anyway, so all these things just happen, and this is what makes it so much fun. All right, I want to get back to this article I started in the first half hour of the show. Open position needs filling immediately. Conservative activists, and this is Robert Patrick Lewis, May 17th of this year, in Uncover DC, one of my favorite places to go for really these people are gutsy. They'll just, you know, they don't pull any punches, and neither do I, so this is why it's fun to listen to. So if you missed the first half hour, go back and listen. I'll wait. No, just kidding. Basically, this is this is probably the best. Let me just start back a little bit here. The media is full of leftist activists, dare I say communists. Hollywood is full of leftist activists. Professional sports are full of leftist activists. The Democrat Party is absolutely full of virtue signaling Marxist and leftist activists. Fortune 500 company boardrooms are now full of leftist activists. The GOP locker room, on the other hand, is full of spineless surrender monkeys, more concerned with the wrong person's opinion of them than they are of taking action to actually solve the problems that they whine and wail about during hits on Hannity and Maria Bartiromo. So that's it. I mean, we are all sick of Republicans complaining. We are, because they don't do anything. When they get power, they don't use it. You know, or they'll appoint someone like Paul Ryan to be Speaker of the House, knowing full well he's a deep state agent who's going to stop the Republicans from doing anything good. You know, that was his job, and he did it very well. He was very good at stopping things. And so the Republicans have no idea how to lead. They have no idea how to take offensive action. They're always on defense, and they're not very good at it. And they're afraid to say anything, you know, because I like this, spineless surrender monkeys. Pretty much sums it up. So then you come to the folks that I know at Action Radio, who are fearless. The advocates I've met at school boards and council meetings. The advocates that are out there doing amazing things, they're absolutely fearless, and they're not spineless surrender monkeys. They don't care what the wrong people say about them, because they're the wrong people. It doesn't matter. And although they try and cancel us as much as possible, we're going to find ways to cancel them. And I'm still looking for a Counter-Strike team that will actually look into the doxers and find out who they are, and we'll dox them. So, I don't think we're done yet. There's a lot of things going on. All right, back to the article. Most conservative pundits don't dare push the Overton window, step out of line of the approved messaging, and are downright terrified of giving their audience any action items or specific instructions on things they need to be done, lest the leftist cancel mob come to their homes and pressure their bosses and advertisers to take away their paychecks. Well, again, I'm not afraid to say things. I've got, you know, like I say, I've got an agreement with Blog Talk Radio, which is pretty easy to follow. You know, don't be racist, don't incite violence, and, you know, away you go. Of course, one person's definition of racism and what's offensive is totally different than another. But if you listen to the show, you listen to the dare I say, diversity of people that partake of Action Radio, and yes, we take on racial issues, but we are not racist in doing so, although the leftists will try and convince you otherwise. But that's okay, because we're right and they're wrong. All right, so where does that leave us? As the article says, Hoplum and impassioned speeches were great a few years ago when we were energizing and catalyzing patriotism in Americans, filling people with pride that we were making America great again and hope that we would once again truly fill the role of global hegemon. Hegemon? Hegemon, excuse me. In other words, see, I don't agree with that. I don't want to be a global hegemonist, have global hegemony. I don't want to run the world. I mean, the world is full of great countries that can run themselves. You know, I've always believed that. But what we can do is make us the best we can. So our job really is to make America the best that America can be, and we're not even close to that. Is this a great country? Yes. Is it a free country? Sort of. Is it as great and free as it could be? Not even close. So that's where we go. Back to the article. But the author says, but those days are gone. Of the impassioned speeches and energizing and catalyzing patriotism. He says those days are gone, as evidenced by the radical nature of the first 100 days of the Biden insurrection. My word, not theirs. Despite his not having any mandate, Richard Barris is the only pollster left who I have any trust in, and he places Biden's actual popularity rate solidly below 50%. I would say below that. If you don't understand the term mandate, here's a high-level explanation. To make radical and dramatic shifts to the American way of life through executive orders or legislation, our entire history pre-2021 required that any politician attempting to make said drastic changes have an extraordinarily high approval rating to do so. Below 50%, or even the fake polls putting him just above 50%, is definitely not a mandate. Okay, so, and this is something I felt too, that there's no basis for what's going on. There's no support for what's going on. There's no, I mean, they stole the election because they knew they couldn't win it. They're doing executive orders because they can't get stuff through Congress, even though you've got gelding Republicans. Okay, and so they're doing all these things, you know, rather than follow the normal logical constitutional process because they know they couldn't do it and get what they want. So the real obstacle is us. Okay, we the people. And there is an election coming up in 2022, but unless they fix 2020, then, you know, there's no guarantee that one's not going to be stolen too. Okay. There's no guarantee that the new laws they pass are actually going to get enforced. So until they fix 2020, in other words, with election audits, election corrections, so that the Trump delegates are in and Biden is removed from the White House before 2022 for being the greatest fraud ever. If that does not happen by the midterm elections, then there's no point in voting Republican. You know, I mean, because there isn't, because they haven't done their job. So they've got until then to do their job, and I think most Americans are waiting for that. As we're waiting for them to do their job, we're not waiting to do our job. We're doing our job now. And so my job is to create Action Radio and give you a mechanism whereby you can actually write citizen legislation, share it, get it to media, get it to other talk shows, by the way. Can't wait for that to happen. Get it to members of Congress, your state legislatures, your local government, your county commissions, your city councils, and anybody else you want. Okay? So we write legislation for you to use. We write legislation for you to take and share. You know, we write legislation to help you write legislation. You know, we teach you how to write legislation. It's not that tough. It really isn't. The basic format of all our bills, and I've got things down to kind of a format now. And the basic format is you have a rationale. Well, first of all, you have a title. You have some really catchy title that actually tells what the bill does. So when I have the Vaccine Manufacturer Product Liability Restoration Act of 2021, it actually restores product liability to vaccine manufacturers. Okay, it doesn't offer, you know, block grants for Dr. Fascist to do his drug pushing. All right, and so the bills that we write, the title actually applies. Okay, the second thing you have is a rationale. Okay, when you go to any of our bills at www.writeyourlaws.com, WRIT EYOURLAWS. So you go to any of those, go to those bills and take a look, and you'll see. I mean, people write them differently, and I like the free flow. But basically, the format I'm tending to lean towards now is a really appropriate title. Okay, a rationale, a paragraph on why the bill is needed. You know, if you're replacing law or amending law, the law that you're amending or replacing, what that says, okay, and then the amendments that we're putting in, okay? So you can see when on the product liability bill, for example, it says that vaccine manufacturers shall not be liable for the products they produce. We just change the word not and say vaccine manufacturers shall be liable for the products they produce. See, this isn't rocket science. It's deceptively simple. The hard part is getting it through the Congress and the legislatures, because they're being paid off by Big Pharma. You know, it's just one example. They're being paid off by all kinds of folks. You know, when they suck up to their donors for donations to run their campaigns, that's where most of the lobbying is done. Okay. So we still have the votes, though, so we can fight that, but it's going to take a lot of media, a lot more sharing, and we can do it because we have social media and we have other, you know, means at our disposal to share what we do here, and that's going to have a huge impact, we hope, by 2022. I wanted to have it by 2018. But we weren't big enough yet, but we will be. Anyway, it says, and where are the GOP politicians bringing that to light? Where are the conservative pundits bringing attention to this most basic destruction of American political rules? Most importantly, where are the conservative activists telling conservatives exactly what they should be doing and who they should be calling, where they should be protesting, and how to wake other Americans up to the wanton destruction of our society? Well, I believe we're doing that at Action Radio. Okay, this is partially why I want to do this article. And it's not just us. You know, you look around the country at the activists, the school board people, the city council folks that are showing up, the county commission folks that are showing up. Local government is changing because it's the most accessible. It's the smallest. It's easiest to get to. You know, not everybody can drive to Washington for a meeting. It's crazy. But your local city hall, yeah, that's just down the road. Anyway, so he says there are a few out there. But we need legions of them if we truly expect to win back our republic. Dan Schultz is an excellent example of a conservative activist. See, obviously he doesn't know about me yet, but I'm going to write them so they do know. Okay, fine. His Precinct Strategies project, highlighted and popularized by appearances on Steve Bannon's War Room, oh yeah, I'll be on that too, did exactly what a conservative activist needs to do. Let's find out what a conservative activist needs to do. He highlighted, back to the article, he highlighted a problem. The GOP has built to have enormous power at the local level, as our Constitution intended it to be, yet over half of those local level executive committee men positions have sat empty for years, with the, quote, good old boy network occupying many of the slots that were filled. Yeah, that's true. We all know our county commissions and city councils and local government and school boards filled with cronies, okay? So you got to get rid of the cronies. You know, you have to run. Yeah, yes, you. Yes, I'm talking to you listening right now, whether podcast or live. You have to run for local government. Otherwise, it's not going to change, okay? Because if you don't, they run. And as long as they run, nothing's going to happen. All right, got about 21 minutes left. This would be a good time to call. Second point, he gave people the tools they needed. His How to Be a Precinct Committeeman book and precinctstrategy.com website told people exactly what they needed to do to win these positions. Okay, that's kind of good. See, I think they're still dealing with elective politics. You know, and you look at all the emphasis that's gone on here. Everything these folks have done have been concerned with elective results. In other words, if you get the right people in, everything's going to be fine. And what I do is legislative political activism. In other words, we're actually dealing with the bills, not the people. So if these other folks deal with the people and get the right people in, and we work with the legislation and get the right bills in, the right combination of the right people and the right bills should have a successful result. Okay? I don't need to work with people. I don't need to work with elections. There's more than enough people doing that. We need more people working with the legislation. Okay? So I need your help. So I'm going to write these folks and tell them what I'm doing and what we're doing and what we're all doing collectively here at Action Radio and see what happens.
back to him. He says he catalyzed masses of people with a new understanding of just how much power they had in numbers. Well, we do that every day too. He inspired people to get off their couches, run for their open local positions, and take back their party. Yep, that sounds familiar. Lynn Wood, Tracy Beans, and many others have followed Dan's advice, and several have won positions by using Dan's strategy. Well, let's see if we get Dan on the line. You know, he was good enough for Steve Bannon. He's good enough for me. So let's get Big Dan. Dan Schultz. And let's see what he's made of. Okay. Anyway, let me play a couple things. Take a quick break for myself. My voice is kind of shot from last week, from Saturday, simply because I did an awful lot of yelling over a band, and it was not a whole lot of fun. So I'll play a couple things. Be right back. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.
So I'm going to have a little fun with you now. A lot of folks that were there Saturday, I told them about some of the politically sarcastic things we do, and I'm just looking for one right now. Here it is, and I'll be right back in a couple minutes. Hello, America. Looks like millions of you are in states where the governor dictator has said that food is essential, but God is not. Fortunately, we have a solution for you. We've combined your essential food shopping with a non-essential religious experience. Being in the same building and being completely intertwined, you can't do one without the other. Welcome to the New Normal Church and Grocery Store. Yes, the New Normal Church and Grocery Store is the first business of its kind to bring God conveniently into your food shopping aisle. Think of this as food for your body and food for your soul. No social distance or group size restrictions here. Upon entering the New Normal Church and Grocery Store, you will pick up your shopping cart. You can then choose from an optional mask with a Star of David, a cross, a crescent moon, a sun for you Shintos, a statue of Buddha, and for you agnostics, a question mark. Headsets are available to play sermons throughout your shopping experience. Some of the favorites include, I'm Going to Heaven and You're Not, Die Infidel Die, Oi, What Not to Say During the Bris, and That Butterfly May Be Your Grandfather. To orient you to the store, the Kosher Jewish Deli is by the Western Wall. A simple shalom gets you service, but be prepared to haggle. For you Muslims, out of courtesy, we put the halal butcher by the Eastern Wall. Sharia store policies require the wearing of both a burqa and a mask, just to be safe. Protestants will find the Wonder Bread, hot dogs, and steak in the central aisles, where all the best-dressed customers can also be found. When you notice the smell of incense, you are nearing the Buddhist section, which is all vegetarian. For Catholics, communion is available in the bakery department by the wafers near the red wine section. Agnostics should go directly to customer service because you folks have no idea what you want anyway. Be sure to offer your confessional to the checker on the way out if you so choose. Please don't forget to first pull down the blind on the plexiglass screen. And if you require ministering, you can talk to your bagger as they push your groceries to your car because all our baggers are cross-trained in theology. The New Normal Church and Grocery Store, your combination alternatives to the separation of church by the state. Yeah, I had too much fun with that. Yeah. Anyway, during the lockdown, I made a bunch of these really sarcastic pieces like that. That's still my favorite one. And just taking all the world's religions and putting it in various parts of a grocery store. This is how my mind works. It's kind of crazy. Anyway, this would be a good time for you new folks that I met this weekend. You know, anybody else who's new to Action Radio, to give me a call. If you want to talk about stuff, because this is a good time. We got about 15 minutes left where we can kind of haggle through some of the things that are going on. I want to get back to this article here, which says open position. Let's start again, Greg. Open position needs filling immediately, conservative activists. And I think they're a little late, even though they wrote this just a few days ago. There's a lot of conservative activists, but they're not really making the big headlines yet. But, you know, we will. Actually, some of those folks, well, let me see, think of, I think it's Dan McCloskey, who was in St. Louis. He was the one where the protesters wanted to rip his house apart. And he shows up with an unloaded AK, unloaded AR-15. Idiot. I still don't understand why it was unloaded. If he had gotten charged, you know, so he's smart enough to bring a gun to defend his property, but stupid enough not to have it loaded. Sorry, if the invading hordes are coming and they're trying to kill you, that's what your firearm is for. All right, excuse me. So he's running for Senate now. I think he's going to win. So some folks are making a big splash. The gentleman in, I think it was South Carolina, who went before his county commission because they had some new big gun bill after one of the tragedies. This is maybe a year or so ago. I think he's lieutenant governor now. Anyway, let me just take a quick break for a second here. Yeah, I'm sorry. My voice is shot from Saturday. But gentleman got up before the county commission, and he said, look, I'm an American. I'm a gun owner, you know, and I'm sick and tired of you people blaming us for the problems of criminals and murderers. I didn't murder anybody. My guns have never hurt anybody. They're locked up. You know, they go to the range. They're carried lawfully. And stop it. Just stop with all these ridiculous laws. And I think he's lieutenant governor now. So it's, you know, so those kind of folks, those are the big ones. But it's more than that. We just need regular folks just to get out there and start being activists. So, yeah, we need activists in journalism. Okay, don't call yourself journalists anymore. You know, call yourself conservative news advocates. All right. I am not a talk show host. I'm basically an action radio host advocate. I'm an activist. There's nothing neutral about this show. There's nothing that isn't biased about this show. You know, I'm biased towards America, biased towards the Constitution. So that's how it works. All right, so back to the article. It says, when they hear the term activist, many conservatives believe that aligning with one means that they have to do things that are immoral, illegal, and outside the bounds of civilized society. But Dan's example, and that'd be Dan Schultz, who I talked about before the break. Dan's example above proves that to be far from reality. Yeah, so he's like, you know, highlights the problem, gives people the tools they need, catalyzes masses, inspires people to get off their couches, and then he had some examples. So the author, Robert, says, I've been working on the author again, just so everybody knows who we're talking about here. Let's go up. Robert Patrick Lewis, one open position needs filling, immediately conservative activist, May 17th of this year in Uncover DC. That's where I'm getting this article from. I'll post it so you'll have it on my Facebook page, but that's where it is if you want to find it. He says, I've been working with another conservative activist, Cindy Chafian, for many months now to assist her own conservative activities and to gain her wise insights on things that we at First Amendment Praetorian, we'll have to look them up, First Amendment Praetorian, can be doing to fight for our republic, whether it's specific actions like Dan's above or rallies across the country to not only get people engaged, but also to have the opportunity to hand out action items and specific things that patriotic Americans can do to win our country back. We need to greatly expand the number of people that are doing more than just giving inspirational speeches or bits of hoplum to make people feel good. And that's the conclusion I came to Saturday. And this is why I'm talking about this article now. It seemed very clear to me that people are not satisfied to just listen to speeches. That, yes, you can be a celebrity and that's all well and good and it's kind of fun. You know, you get your picture taken with them and okay, fine. Get an autograph, whatever. But that's not really changing anything. You know, talk radio doesn't really change anything. Especially when you go from, you know, a really great call to Biff's, you know, used car lot and the ideas that the caller had are completely forgotten. And I've heard talk show hosts say this, hey, that's a great idea. Yeah, let's go to Biff's car lot and we'll be right back. You know, and the idea is totally dismissed. Well, see, we don't do that here. If you have a great idea, I'm going to work with you. I'm going to see if we can turn it into legislation if that's the right way to go. You know, we're going to take things and make them far more than they were originally. So there are no stupid ideas. Well, if it is, I'll tell you. No, just kidding. But if you have an idea, if you want to explore an idea, if you want to become an activist and you've got something you want to try, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Let's see what other people think. You know, you might get the backing that you need to do something that other folks have said, well, you can't do that. That's crazy. That makes no sense. We might find that it's not crazy and it makes perfect sense. That's what we do. So you never know until you get out there and actually start doing stuff. So the article says we need fighters, conservative activists,
pushing the envelope and leading the army of Americans who are disgusted with the way our nation is being destroyed from within. I probably attended more patriotic events than the vast majority of Americans at the end of last year because, as the founder of First Amendment Praetorian, going to look that up, it was our job and duty to be there to ensure that Antifa and BLM activists could no longer harm Americans for expressing their God-given and constitutionally enshrined First Amendment rights. Oh, more power to you guys. He says, well, I always left those events inspired and engaged, although flying across the country every week to attend them could be a point in itself that I was highly engaged. There was always a spot of emptiness that I felt afterward, given my military and special forces background. Ooh, nice to drop that in there. That's kind of cool. All right, let's see where that leads us. He says, I would leave each of these events marveling at the enormous crowds of highly engaged patriotic Americans that had done the same as I had and traveled to these events, but also with a dark sense of foreboding that those same crowds were leaving without action items, specific tasks, or mission sets to ensure that we held on to this great nation. See, that's the thing. When you came to my table at Action Radio, it was just the opposite. I had bills for everybody. I had like our 22 bills to rock the nation. I had the websites. I said, go here, listen to the show, check out the bills, share the bills, get them to your member of Congress, talk about them on talk shows. We had a ton of action items. So I'm doing everything that this Robert seems to be telling us to do. And I didn't even talk to him. It's like, hey, I guess I'm doing the right thing. So I'm going to keep doing it. But what I want to do also is tell Robert, the guy that wrote this article, that we are doing it. Maybe we can get some more press coverage so we get more listeners. So we'll get more people and we'll be even stronger advocates than we are now. And of course, that's the idea. Okay. Now that events are beginning to pick back up, he says, we at the First Amendment Praetorian, there you go, there's our organization again, already booked for multiple events and several nationwide tours for this year and next. He says, I hope that patriotic Americans begin to understand that we need to put away our disgust with the term activist and instead understand that they are our greatest weapons, dare I say generals, in this fight. Now, that's another thing I don't understand. What's wrong with the term activist? Why are conservatives so afraid of that? Maybe I haven't noticed it. Maybe I don't travel in the same big circles. Maybe because I talk to regular people who are activists. But I don't see this as this kind of, you know, this is huge fear or loathing of people to get involved. I think if anything, people want to get involved. I think there's a lack of direction. I think it's hard to get involved, you know, unless you have an idea how to do it, you know, and there's various places to learn about being an activist. The easiest is to just start calling, you know, calling talk shows, listen to talk shows, start reading, and start writing. Okay. Well, let me readjust here for a second. So, excuse me. Now that I think about it, I should be better tomorrow. I'll give my voice a bit of a rest. Now that I think about it, writing is one of the most important things you can do. Learn to be a good writer. That hasn't been mentioned in this article at all yet. All right. So if you can write well, there was a book, William Strunk, I think he wrote the intro, E.B. White. E.B. White wrote a book called The Elements of Style. And it is the best book on composition you're ever going to read. It's short. In fact, he tells you about that too. Brevity. Be brief. You know, if you can say it in two words, do. You know, don't make long sentences. The more extra words you have, the less your argument is engaging. Okay. So be brief. Be succinct. Get to the point. You know, and that's why I try and get as many points as possible in these shows so that you have something you can latch onto, not just talking about nothing for no reason for the time that we're here. Surprised we haven't had calls today. I guess it's, I don't know. Surprise, you know, but it's okay. People listen a lot and that's okay too. Most people don't call talk shows. They don't. Only about, you know, 0.1% of people actually call a talk show. I hope it'll be higher than that someday for our show. But right now, like I say, not a lot of folks check in. All right. So back to the article here. He says, and we're almost done. He says, so the question now is, what are you going to do? I mean, that's a question I ask everybody all the time anyway. So what are you going to do? Will you say a few patriotic things on social media and call that enough? Yeah, keyboard warriors. Will you attend these rallies and consider your duty as a patriotic American fulfilled? Hardly. Or will you seek out one of the conservative activists who is giving out action items, tell people specifically how to take our republic back? Most importantly, will you deliver on your tasks once given to you? U.S. Special Forces, that would be Green Berets, in parentheses, my alma mater of manhood, are known as combat multipliers because we travel to the furthest reaches of the hottest places of the world and train, arm, and equip rebel groups to take their own freedom back. If we could begin a Special Forces-like factory turning out conservative activists by the dozens, we would win this war of information very quickly. Well, it's funny you should say that, Robert, because I think that's exactly what Action Radio is. You know, we are a Special Forces factory turning out conservative activists as fast as we can. You know, actually, we don't call it conservative activists. Basically, I call you citizen legislators, which I think is a legislator to me is more than an activist. An activist, you know, yeah, you're taking action, but a legislator, a citizen legislator, someone who actually writes the laws that you consent to be governed by, that is an action item. You want an action item there, Robert? I'll give you an action item. Citizen legislator, because that's what we do. And so as we go, there's more bills I have to write. In fact, the governor of Florida mentioned something about, you know, if somebody wants to put a bill against critical race theory or something else, I forgot what it was. He says, if you want to put a bill of this particular thing on my desk, I'll be all for it. Now, the legislature of Florida is not going to meet for another year, okay? But that doesn't mean the citizen legislature has given up. We meet every day. So I have news for you. Yeah, so I got to write this guy. Tell him that the answer to his questions is already here with this particular operation in Action Radio. And I'm sure there are operations like this. Well, maybe not just like this, but I'm sure there are action operations around the country doing different things. And so hopefully I'll be able to turn various talk show hosts into action hosts, Action Radio hosts. I will teach talk show hosts how to work legislation, how to write legislation, how to work with their own audience and, you know, do their own bills. Right. So, but we'll still have the best ideas here because that's what we do. But, you know, we can distribute some bills to other shows and they can take over and, you know, work with those particular bills and particular audience and particular state legislatures and particular congressional decorations. Anyway, I love this. If we could begin a special forces like factory turning out conservative activists by the dozens, we would win this war of information very quickly. I have to tell you, Congressman Matt Gaetz, when he used to call the show, like, every week, you know, called us at Action Radio the Ideas Factory. And so it's just funny the language that I see coming back to us, that if we are the Ideas Factory, if we have the best citizen legislation, if we have the best advocates and people to take that message far and wide, we're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And it's coming. It's definitely coming. So just tell your friends, tell your family, hang in there, share our bills, you know, tell your talk shows that there's a change coming, and it's going to be a big fat wave, and it's going to come rolling right over everybody. All right, so the last thing he says is, or, I hate the other choice, or we can continue to consider the term activist a dirty word and prepare our children for communism. All right, he says, the choice is yours, but choose wisely. Our lives and livelihoods depend on it. Yeah, no kidding. All right, so I've got the address of Uncovered DC. We're going to have a great chat. We're going to see what we can do to get our message to them. Other things, just to see the other couple of other items in the news. I covered that. Oh, I'll probably get this tomorrow or Wednesday in the vaccine, the Not Ready for Facebook vaccine report. OSHA, and this is from Children's Health Defense, says that employers are liable for injury and death of their employees if they require vaccines. Okay, that's big news. Let me pull out one right now, see if I can find it real quick here. Here we go. I just have to come up right up. So the defender, and this is where you'll find writings of folks, you know, that work with Children's Health Defense, which is Robert Francis Kennedy Jr.'s organization. So he says the article, and this is Megan Redshaw from, give me a date, folks, give me a date in the article. Oh, 5/20, so May 20th. Yeah, so I've only got 90 seconds. Well, that's no fun. All right, so I'll do this quickly. Its new OSHA guidance holds employers liable for adverse reactions if they require employees be vaccinated for COVID as a condition of employment, which could negatively impact the employer's safety rating. Ooh, the defendant, oh, here we go. It says new guidance from Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, is making employers think twice about their COVID vaccine requirements. Here's the key part. On April 20th, companies were put on notice they'll be responsible for any adverse reaction should they require their employees be vaccinated with a COVID vaccine.
in the, quote, frequently asked questions section of OSHA's website having to do with COVID safety compliance. A question was asked whether an adverse reaction to a COVID vaccine had to be recorded if an employer mandated vaccination as a condition for employment. So there you go. OSHA stated, and here we go. I got 38 seconds. If you require your employees to be vaccinated as a condition of employment, that is for work-related reasons, then any adverse reaction to the COVID-19 vaccine is work-related. The adverse reaction is recordable if it is a new case number under 29 CFR 1904.6 and meets one or more of the general recording criteria in 29 CFR 1904.7. So there you go. So this is last minute news. We'll get more news as we go. But yeah, so if an employer mandates you get a vaccine, they are liable for anything that happens to you. Fascinating, isn't it? All right, we're out of time for today. Back tomorrow, Gene Vernick is going to kick it off with the Gene Vernick Report. And then we'll have Josie with the South of the Border Report. It's going to be another busy day. We've had a busy day today. Fascinating stuff. I had no idea what we were going to cover. But that's how it goes. Anyway, thank you for listening. Welcome to Action Radio if you're new. And this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Podcast should be available about 9:05 Central Time. And I'll be back tomorrow at 7 o'clock in the morning Central Time.